Welcome to the Deep Sky Monologues. Long exposure imagery brought forth from the dead of night and made to dance humiliatingly for your entertainment. It all began like a scenario from some generic American movie. Rob walked into his apartment and saw his girlfriend's bags, packed and waiting at the door. She stood there with her arms folded, and she said, "We need to talk." The news she gave him after that was exactly what you'd expect, and before she was out the door, he only managed to ask one question. Why? At that, she turned to him, looked him straight in the eye, and told him, "Because you can't deliver the goods." And then, she picked her bags up, walked out the door, and that was the last time he ever saw her. Shortly afterward, as he buttered his toast, he began to reflect on the incident, and all he could think about was how banal the whole thing was. How cliched. When did his life become so poorly written? The whole idea that real life events might unfold in this way was ridiculous, and he couldn't take it seriously. He actually laughed to himself for much of the evening, and watched TV, aimlessly flicking between the channels, and not really taking any of it in. But when it was time to sleep, he began to feel differently. His mind kept coming back to the incident, and he found himself thinking about it over and over endlessly, and he found no rest. You can't deliver the goods. That was the phrase he kept coming back to. And the more he thought about it, the more he realized she was right. He couldn't deliver the goods. He had never delivered the goods. In fact, this had been his main problem throughout his whole life. In school, he had once set up a catalog of items to sell to the other students. He sold everything. Pen and paper, erasers, dead spiders, rubber snakes, drawing compasses, microscopes, spare uniforms, whoopee cushions, sophisticated fart machines complete with stink bombs, candid photos of teachers in compromising positions. He even sold stand-in replacements for the student who wanted to skip class. By the end of the first week, he had made thousands from the other children. There was only one problem, one fatal flaw in his plan. It had never occurred to him that he would have to actually deliver the goods he sold. And so he spent several weeks in a correctional facility for troubled youths. But when he looked back on his life, he saw that it began even before then. As an infant, he had been chronically constipated. And to top matters off, as an adult, he shot blanks, both at the shooting range and in the bedroom. Never had he been able to produce the normal emissions of love. The next day, he went to work having gotten no sleep. Rob worked at a local courier company. He was the manager of their warehouse, and he spent all day taking deliveries and dispatching other people to deliver. At no time did he himself actually deliver the goods. At best, he was in a state of receiving. For 2 weeks, he tried to carry on this way, getting very little sleep, and running his mind repeatedly over the same track, convincing himself more with each passing day that he did not deliver, that he could not deliver. Soon, his ex-girlfriend's face became merely an abstraction. Her name was quickly forgotten. All he remembered about her was that one statement. In fact, it wasn't long before that one statement was all he seemed to remember about anything. One night, he came home and the whole matter had come to a head in his mind. He realized he couldn't live this way. Early in the evening, he sat and thought about his situation and drank wine, contemplating the universe and the goods that it had delivered him. Or perhaps, failed to deliver. He thought about the delivered goods that had come to him from some unknown source. A severed fish head. $10,000 in large bills with tracked serial numbers, for which he would later be interrogated. There was one time when he found a soggy shoe while jogging through the park. And more recently, there was the girlfriend who had put him in this mess. And he realized that he had been shortchanged. By the time midnight rolled along, he had moved on from wine to drinking straight bourbon, and he had moved on from thinking about the universe as some nebulous abstraction, and had begun contemplating God. He began to think of the goods that God had delivered in the same light. In fact, the more he thought about it, the more he noticed that he and God had a lot in common. Neither one of them had ever been able to deliver the goods. He thought about how God had created people in his own image, and how the people wound up being so vile and repugnant that he drowned almost all of them out of a sense of distaste. Distaste, perhaps, for his own image. He thought about Job and the way that God had gambled against another personality he had created. And in order to see this gamble through, he murdered a man's entire family, just to see how he might react. And the most incredible thing was, they didn't even bet real money. He could find no delivery of goods which had taken place in the whole transaction. Maybe, he thought, he and God were cut from the same cloth. Maybe he was made in the image of God after all, and both of them were screw-ups. After another sleepless night, he went to church wearing sunglasses. In order to avoid his normal prejudices, he went to a church service for a denomination he had never heard of, the Divine Brothers of Deliverance. After the service, he was approached by the priest who had delivered the sermon. Father Jeffrey, he called himself. He walked right up to Rob and said, "I feel your suffering, brother. Would you like to come to my office?" Rob didn't say anything. He just nodded and followed as Father Jeffrey went to a room in the back of the church. Sitting down, Father Jeffrey asked him, "What seems to be troubling you?" And Rob, without hesitating, explained his whole issue. How he had never been able to deliver the goods. He even told Father Jeffrey about his musings on God. Father Jeffrey took it all in without saying a word. And when the story was done, he sat back in his chair, legs crossed, gently rocking, his fingertips pressed together, his eyes toward the ceiling. And after some thought, he said, "You know, Rob, in our denomination, a priest, a man in my position, is not allowed to own any property, We are forbidden from making any monetary gains from any of our endeavors, except where we raise money for the church and for charity. It is for this reason that when I started my delivery company, I used a false name. And I ensured that it was completely undetectable by any government agencies. All business is conducted cash in hand, and the highest level of discretion is required for me to maintain the priesthood. As a consequence, my delivery service is geared toward those people who require the highest level of discretion. It just so happens that, due to unforeseen circumstances, the man who was driving my trucks is now in the hospital, unconscious. You might say he had a bit of an accident, but they think he'll pull through. Anyway, I'm looking for a new driver. Someone who's willing to deliver the goods. And as he said that last part, he looked at Rob with an unwavering gaze and awaited his response. Rob hesitated only a moment and said, "I'll do it." So he began doing deliveries for Father Jeffrey. His first delivery was an entire truck full of the Divine Brothers Bibles. Father Jeffrey's service was used because these Bibles contain several passages which, according to the claims of their faith, portray a true and accurate translation where all other attempts have failed. For example, it was claimed that the Divine Brothers Bible contained clear prophecies about modern politicians, both those currently in office and those who will rise to power in the future. Father Jeffrey explained that the government was afraid of the power of the true Word of God, and thus they were trying to monitor the spread of the true Bible. He also said that current officials were afraid of the prophecies of future successors, and even the average man often dislikes the Divine Brothers translation because it ruins the surprise. For all these reasons, discretion was necessary. He also mentioned in passing that although the Divine Brothers were a peaceful people, the book may also contain instructions on the use of firearms, as well as some controversial views on the merits of exercising holy righteousness. When the Bibles had all been loaded up and it was time for Rob to take off, Father Jeffrey handed him a heavy, thick metal cross and said, "May the Lord be with you." Driving up to his destination, Rob saw a father and two sons standing in the driveway of a lone house, about an hour away from the nearest town. It was 3 a.m., and they had apparently been standing in the dark. Each one held a thick metal cross in one hand, just like the one Father Jeffrey had provided. Rob got out of the truck and told them he was there to make a delivery. The father eyed him suspiciously and said, "Where's your cross?" Rob was confused. "My cross? It's in the back of the truck. Why?" The father paused and looked Rob up and down. "Out at night without a cross? You're a brave man. Let's get the Bibles." And so they proceeded to unload the Bibles into the garage. When they had unloaded all of them, Rob noticed a small pile of crosses in the back. He turned to the father. "Are these yours too? Father Jeffrey didn't mention them." "Yeah, they're ours," he said. And silently, they hauled the crosses out of the truck. When it was done, Rob thanked them for their business, and that was all there was to it. The next delivery was a huge batch of flour. The flour was divided up into clear plastic bags, and instead of being marked flour, each bag was simply marked 1 kg. It might seem strange that a discreet delivery service would be used for flour, but Father Jeffrey explained that his clients had a special formula for flour which made a number of business competitors jealous. These other businesses were so influential that they had gotten the clients blackballed with all of the above-ground delivery services. Satisfied with this explanation, Rob agreed to take the flower to a warehouse in the middle of the night. When he arrived, he was greeted by three men in black leather coats, all with their hands in their pockets. "Is that the snow?" one of them asked. Rob explained that he was supposed to be delivering flour. "Flour?" the man laughed. "Oh yeah, flour. We call it snow as a little joke." So Rob and one of the guys proceeded to unload the flour into the warehouse, while the other two stood and watched, their hands in their pockets the whole time. When it was all done, Rob got back behind the wheel, only to see one of the men pull a gun out of his pocket and point it at him. He tried to remain cool and rolled down the window. "Is there a problem?" he asked. "Yeah," said the guy in the jacket. "We're short." Rob took a moment to reflect on the psychological issues faced by height-deficient males in modern society, and then looked down to the cross on the seat next to him. In a moment of inspiration, he reached for it and began to pray to the God who was responsible for so many screw-ups. He prayed that maybe God would have incompetence enough to screw things up for someone else on this particular occasion. There was a shot through the windscreen which barely missed his head, and with that, Rob grabbed the cross, held it up and squeezed, yelling, "Please, God. Oh, please." There was a kickback from the cross which blew it out of his hand, and a bullet flew from one end of it, hitting Rob's assailant in the foot. Before he knew what he was doing, Rob had turned on the engine and pulled away with a screech. The next day, Rob knocked on Father Jeffrey's door, and Father Jeffrey answered, looking distressed and unslept. "Thank God you're here," Father Jeffrey croaked. "Come in." Rob stepped into the modest home to see that it had been completely ransacked. All of the furniture was overturned and smashed. Scattered across the floor, he could see papers, books, cushions, broken glass, clothes, smashed electronic components, condoms, razors, DVDs, old cassette tapes, a handful of hardcore fetish magazines, and in the far wall, there were numerous bullet holes. Father Jeffrey was on the verge of hysterics. There were tears in his eyes, and his breathing was rapid and shallow, punctuated by sobs. "I have another delivery for you to make," he said. "You'll have to leave tonight, on a plane. You'll be looking after a shipment of Bibles. You have to do it." "Forget it," said Rob. "After last night, I'm out. Those bastards shot at me over a little flower and a height discrepancy. I can deliver goods some other way, but it won't be happening if I'm dead." At that, Father Jeffrey let out a chilling wail and collapsed in a heap on the floor. "You have to," he screamed. "He's got my wife. Oh God, please deliver me from this ordeal." "Your wife? Who are you talking about?" "The Archbishop," said Father Jeffrey. "He barged in here last night with a cross as big as his leg, holding it at the hip like some 1930s gangster. He told me he knew all about the delivery business, and that more missionary work needed to be done, starting immediately, or else he'd go to the police. He said my wife was safe at his place, but that the only way to stay safe in this world is to do God's work. I told him I'd go to the police, and he said the police would find the money I've earned with my business, but they'd never find my wife." At that, Rob's heart softened a little. "Jesus Christ, man," he said. "What's the delivery he wants you to make?" Father Jeffrey looked up at Rob with an expression of sudden wild hope. "He wants a courier for a storage container of Bibles going overseas." Despite his better judgment, Rob simply nodded and said, "All right, tell me what I need to do." The Bibles were going to Marxistan, A small island nation so harsh in its isolationism and dedication to strong government repression that it was not recognized or even acknowledged to exist by any other people in the world. Most governments were not aware of its existence at all. The government of Marxistan had its own brand of communism, and it would not tolerate opposing views of any kind in its territory. Father Jeffrey was nice enough to point out that attempting to carry a Bible into the country was considered a crime against the people and would be punished severely. Needless to say, an entire storage container full of Bibles would be a most serious transgression indeed. But as a precautionary measure, all the Bibles in the crate had been given dust jackets that disguised them as a new scholarly rendition of Das Kapital, complete with previously unpublished material. Within hours, Rob was in the cargo hold of a plane headed to Marxistan, sitting next to the enormous shipping container. As the plane flew, he couldn't sleep. He realized that in this situation, he may not be able to deliver the goods. And in fact, he didn't want to anymore. He began to wonder if delivery was really something he was capable of after all. Maybe, in trying to deliver, he was really working against his own true self. So he sat in the cargo hold, ruminating, hypnotized by the low amber light, the drone of the engines, and the seemingly endless stretch of time in front of him before landing. When the plane did land, he shuffled out of the cargo hold and watched as a truck hauled the shipping container out to the inspection area. The container was opened before a customs officer, who looked through Rob's papers, eyeing both him and the cargo suspiciously. "What's in the container?" he asked. Rob's eyes were downcast as he replied, "Copies of Das Kapital, to feed the intellect and revolutionary fire of the good people of Marxistan." The officer looked perplexed. "Surely you realize that the people of Marxistan are already familiar with this book." Rob nodded and tried to look agreeable. "Yes, but this edition contains new material, previously too revolutionary for the capitalist publishing dogs who were responsible for the originals." At this, the customs officer looked genuinely intrigued. "May I have a look?" he asked. And all Rob could think to say was, "Of course. Why not? We are all comrades, after all." The customs officer picked up a book from the container and opened it to the preface, which was largely a diatribe about the need for religion in all areas of life, the eternal torment that would be faced by unbelievers, the immorality of living on an island, the divine providence of unadulterated capitalism, the poor fashion choices exercised by Karl Marx and those inspired by him, and of course, the worthlessness of all government, including a curious mention specifically of customs regulations. And all of this was peppered with scriptural references and an exhortation to join the Divine Brothers of Deliverance in their righteous calling as the world's true religion. By his third night sleeping on the concrete floor of his prison cell, it was fair to say that Rob was getting a little concerned. When he had slept, it had been poorly. He was cold and underfed, and he was so conscious of his desire for escape from his real-life circumstances that he kept waking himself up. Right on the verge of sleep, he would become excited that he was close to his goal, and that excitement would awaken him. Nevertheless, he did eventually sleep, and at that time, he had a curious dream. Before him stood Mikhail Bakunin, the famous anarchist activist, known for his anti-capitalism and anti-communism alike. The two of them stood in an old bar, like something out of a Humphrey Bogart movie, and they were alone. Bakunin's eyes slowly scanned from Rob's head, down his chest, to his stomach, and lastly, to his crotch, where they stayed. Just when the situation was awkward enough that Rob was about to say something, Bakunin spoke. He said, "Zip up your fly." And Rob looked down to see that not only was his fly unzipped, but he was hanging out of it, exposed completely. At that moment, all he could think was, "This is not what I would like to be talking about right now. I get one chance to interact with an important historical figure, and look what happens. This is so typical of me." He had so many questions racing through his mind that he would have liked to ask. Things like, "If you could only hate two tyrannies throughout history and had to like the rest, which two would you choose?" Or, "What flavor of ice cream do you think best represents the anarchist vision?" Instead, he was stuck looking down at his own flopping unmentionables, wordless, until he awoke. In the pitch black of his cell, Rob sat up. He knew instantly that this dream was of some monumental importance to him, but he wasn't quite sure how. He tried to think of it from a psychoanalytic point of view. The great anarchist figure was surely representative of something inside of him which wanted to be free. Yet, that very same aspect of his psyche pointed to the one part of his body which had been freed, and requested that it should again become imprisoned in the confines of his pants. Although, come to think of it, Bakunin had not specified to him that he should reposition himself before the act of zipping up. Perhaps this was actually a request for self-castration. Perhaps this hinted at the sacrifice of other energies necessary for focus and ultimate success. And suddenly, this line of thought brought him to what he believed to be the correct solution. It was the sacrifice of his ideals of freedom that must be given up, and not in part, but completely. Suddenly, he had the clarity to see that his imprisonment was painful because of his desire to be free. When free from that desire, he would truly be free from his imprisonment. And with this realization, he heard someone walking along the corridor that led to his cell. A light was turned on, and he could again see his surroundings. The footsteps stopped when they reached his door, and he heard the jiggling sound of keys. The next thing he knew, the door had been unlocked and partially opened, and the person was again walking away. Rob sat for a minute or two, contemplating. If he was truly free of his desire for freedom, then there would be no sense in leaving. Leave or stay, it should all be the same. This is what he kept telling himself as he walked, and he kept repeating it over and over, even as he was delivered into the blinding sunrise.